I fell down the stairs mid podcast.
What?
I can't wait to listen to that recording.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Run of Play podcast. A fresh take on football with no filter, no censor, and no suits. Alongside Elliot, Liam, Cameron, and myself, Abby, is Simon Dixon. Simon is the co-founder of Dixon Baxi, a brand and design consultancy, using creativity to design a better future. We'll be chatting to Simon about his agency's involvement in some designs we're all familiar with, but we just don't realise the processes that go into creating them.
Thanks for joining us, Simon. We're so happy to have you on the podcast. Design is something that is so intrinsically linked with football nowadays, and something that everyone kind of scrutinizes on a daily basis. Before we get into kind of design specifics, could you just talk us through what it is your company does in relation to football? And do you support a team, Simon?
Hey, it's really nice to be here. So I'm a co-founder of a company called Dixon Baxi, which has been going about 19 years, and what's called a branding agency. And what we do is we create the strategies and the brands and identities, and then the design systems that deliver that for lots of different types of companies. But we have a very strong specialty in sport. So we work with the Olympics, Formula One, Tour de France. But we have a real specialty in football. So, you know, we've rebranded AC Milan. We've worked with Chelsea. We work with the Premier League. You know, we did the design system for Amazon Prime, the football you watch there. We did the design system for BT Sport that you watch. So that's what we do, is we create ideas and the things that connect fans to their clubs, to the game they love, and we create the design systems that deliver that. And we do that in the UK, but we do that internationally. So on any given day, there's probably about a billion people watching the design systems we created or the brands we created for football clubs.
Yeah, fantastic.
I support Leeds United, by the way, which is an epic thing to be at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Bielsa is doing wonders. Well, he has been for years.
Yeah, he's a legend. Anyone who sits in a bucket and plays football like that.
I think brilliant. Just like touching on that, you said obviously you know like specialise in football and sort of mentioned some of the projects and the clubs that you've worked with there. Obviously, you know, design I think is a massive part of football, especially with, you know, all the eyes that are on the game now at all times. When you are looking at clubs like AC Milan or Chelsea, whatever, and you sort of really have to, you know, delve into their identity and what is unique about that club that will then, you know, resonate and come through with the work that you do. How do you sort of know when that thing has been successful or when you feel like you've, you know, you've cracked it and you've got the feeling of that club in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, it's an interesting balance because obviously football clubs share a lot of similar things. They operate, they do a similar thing, and fans are fans of fans. But when you get inside clubs, there is a difference. So if you speak to, say, AC Milan, the fact that they're a Milanese club, they've got Inter as a rival, the San Siro, the kind of lifestyle, the swagger, the history, that is different to other football clubs. And of course, the first thing we do is we always talk to the fans. So, you know, a lot of our team, me specifically, I've stood on terraces at football matches all over the world, you know, in Mexico City, in Leeds, in Milan, and places like that. And of course, that's where it starts, the stadium and the heroes and the people who play the football. But football is a global game. So if you take AC Milan, 450 million people around the world are fans of AC Milan, but about 80,000 people can see them in the stadium. So what you're doing is serving two masters. You're serving the people who go there every week, day in, day out, year in, year out, and have been part of the fabric of the club, versus the people who might be in Malaysia or in the UK who are really passionate for the club, but they have a more distant and remote relationship. And it's about relationships. So we meet the fans, we meet the people behind the scenes, we meet the players, you know, we meet the people who make the club, both past, present and future, and listen to what they care about. And then within that, you start to find the recipe, the kind of the heartbeat of the club, really. And then you turn that into a design system. So that's our job really, is to listen to people first and then translate that into something that means something to them. Because football is passion based. You can't change your football club. You can buy Nike trainers or you can buy Adidas trainers, but you can't swap from AC Milan to Leeds.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Like you said there, serving those two different markets. Me and Cam, we work at a company called Copper 19. We did a film. We've got a guy who works for us called Martino, who's like a massive AC Milan fan, to the point where it's almost quite intimidating. And he did a piece where he looked at, like, with the Curva Sud and those fans that work there, sort of like one of the first ultras groups. Well, I think they might have been the first ultras group in football. But then obviously the other side of AC Milan being, you know, that sort of like you mentioned or touched on, that sort of swagger, sort of touching into those sort of like fashion subtopics and all of that as well, which I imagine like would please a lot of UK fans, American fans. Is there one thing for them in particular that you think, even though those fans do have sort of different, like different touching points for AC Milan, is there a thread that runs throughout where you can sort of, they all share one sort of, I guess, common love of AC Milan? And does that touch into a certain like way the team plays, or is it a look or just a feel?
It's a feeling as much as anything. There's this idea which is Sempre Milan, which means always Milan. So once you're kind of a Milan fan, you're always a fan, which is similar to a lot of clubs. But when you think about great clubs, you know, if you think about AC Milan, Maldini, Baresi, Costa Curta, you know, Rijkaard, Hullet, Van Basten, and you can, you know, Kaká, whoever. It's that history and the story that has been told that you're part of, basically, because all clubs have deep histories, and it's how you translate that history into a kind of contemporary way of living in the real world. And it's like a reinterpretation of that kind of style and swagger and the lifestyle and all of those stories into something that works on social, something that works in a new type of jersey that you wear, something that you stitch into the fabric of people's lives, because it's a lifestyle choice. Football defines who you are as a person. And what we found with Milan was they represented the best of Milan, but they also represented the best of Italy and that kind of culture and that intelligence, that style, that carrying themselves. And it's a bit like something like Ferrari. Loads of people, millions of people around the world will wear a Ferrari hat, but never drive a Ferrari, never mind own one. So you connect to something which is a bigger idea than the literal part of it. And someone like Milan taps into that kind of mindset.
Hmm. You mentioned it actually, you know, talking about the jerseys you wear. And at the start of the season, you always get the experts coming out, you know, criticising kits and saying, why is it not like this? Why have they gone with that pattern? And everyone's disagreeing if they like or don't like their shirt and strip for the season. But can you give us a bit of an insight as to how decisions get made on kits as well? Because you do see some weird kits. For example, obviously, one that springs to mind is the United one with the zebra print. I mean, where have they got that one from?
Well, the truth is, there's good and bad designers. So it comes down to taste. And of course, the thing with football is it sits alongside fashion in a really interesting way, because it becomes a product of the time. So think about those like crazy 90s kits and all those crazy colours. That was at the same time as, you know, kind of rave music and music culture was very bright and intense. 80s had that kind of really poppy colours. And, you know, what football is, it's part of regular life and common culture. So what happens is the people who design the strips are influenced by that. And I think the better the club knows itself, the better the club knows its fans, and the more confident it is, the better job they do. But it is literally, it's really subjective, because, you know, people don't like change. That's the truth of it. So you change something in a football club and everyone throws their arms up and they're absolutely crazy mad that you've done it. And then 3 months later, when the club's got into the Champions League, they're happy as Larry, drunk as a log, wearing the shirt they hated. So I think you have to give people time to buy into it. And that's what we find when we're designing, whatever we design for football clubs, is that there is a transition where the fans get used to it, then they buy into it.
You definitely have those designs where, especially on, you know, social media now, where they get released and you have that instant reaction. You know, things get said on Twitter. You can almost know if a kit's or a design is liked by fans just by reading through the comments on Twitter instantly. But there are definitely those designs that grow on people, that grow throughout the season, and also then the memories that people associate with those kits, which is something we covered in a previous pod, where, you know, once, as you say, once they go into the Champions League or once they start winning in that kit, it's linked to memories, and they start to have a fond memory of that. And that's the same with design as well.
Yeah, we find that with players as well. So like if you're working in, you know, if you're working in China or Malaysia, they might be following Messi or Ronaldo versus Real Madrid or Barcelona. So what happens is the hero becomes the iconic representation with the jersey. So it depends, again, where you are in the journey and the story. And, you know, social media is fantastic because we can all see everything at the same time. But of course, naturally, you tend to hear the negative much faster than you do the positive, because people who are happy just crack on and enjoy it. And the people who are unhappy sit there ready to be triggered. So I think you have to just navigate that a little bit when you're thinking about the volume or the importance of the people talking versus the millions of people who actually enjoy the stuff.
Got to be wary of those comments. Got to be wary of those comments. Don't read too much into them. I suppose there's the good side of design, but then there's also kind of some example. Well, I can only think of really one off the top of my head. Attempted redesigns in the past, and I think you'll probably know what I'm about to say. Leeds United, where it's been completely rejected by the football community. Do you worry about how? I suppose it's building on the last point. Do you worry about how fans react to designs? So obviously the Leeds one was a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, being a Leeds fan, when I got sent by a friend, I thought he was sending it as a joke. And then I got sent by another friend and I thought, oh, they're in on this gag together. The fans were like, stop illustration to wind me up because they know I'm a designer. And the truth is, that's one of those things which I think Andrea and the club wanted to do the right thing, which is they wanted to celebrate the centenary and they wanted to move on as a club. But I think the process hadn't been thought through, and the iconography they chose, yes, we do the raised fist to our heart, but there's a lot of connotations to that, particularly of white people, that are not very positive. So if you don't think through the semiotics of what you're doing, it doesn't work. The other thing is, if you don't design it brilliantly, it doesn't work. It's like a jersey. If it's really well designed, you might not like the style of it, but you'll know it's well designed. If it's badly designed, you'll know it's badly designed. And sometimes fans don't know exactly what's wrong, but they know it's not right. And that's what happened with Leeds, I think. But I think they were trying to do the right thing. And I think what it's about is you've got to figure out what has value to fans. Because if you take a crest, the shape of it, LUFC, you know, we used to have a logo which was a diagonal with just blue LUFC. You know, we've used yellow more than we have blue over in the past. So what you've got to think about is, through the history of the crest, what things are actually meaningful to the fans. So if you're a Chelsea fan, blue is obviously massively important. But what is it in the crest that you care about? And they're the things you should look for. And then you should listen to the fans and figure out what they want. And you can't do it for everybody, but you try and do the right thing. And if you do the right thing, I think you just have to kind of push through. Once you release it.
I think what you said there about Leeds as well, I think when that did come out, obviously the reaction to that, I can't remember how quickly it was that they sort of reversed the decision. But I think that's an interesting point as well, because I think you touched on it there, like with a lot of design, I don't know if it's something that you've experienced, but how, especially recently, like Cam said, we've spoken to other people about this, that idea of sort of like, with how things are at the moment and how uncertain everything is, that dipping into the past with, you know, rose-tinted glasses, especially for a club like Leeds, for example. And even looking at your kit this year, it looks almost sort of like quite a, you know, like a slick, old-fashioned, like retro fit. And I think a club who, you know, steeped in history, proud of everything that they've achieved. Have you sort of noticed in the work that you've been doing sort of over the last couple of years that there is, from fans, there is always sort of like a... I guess they're just pleased in a way to sort of go back to those times. And have you noticed that there is sort of a more focus and more eyes on sort of like retro designs now than there maybe were 5 or 10 years ago?
I think it's both. You know, our kit is based on Real Madrid's kit, and that's how we got it originally. So it is inevitably at its best super iconic. It's a bit like watching England playing in blue and red. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know? So when you come back to the Premier League, falling back on the iconic style of the kit that made you famous as a club makes a lot of sense. But what we find in when we research and talk to people who are fans, they like both things. They like the history, but they also like it recontextualized, and they want to think about the future, not the past all the time, because a lot of clubs rest on their laurels.
Yeah.
And the reason I like Leeds at the moment is no one's talking about Don Revie, no one's talking about Wilco's Army or Strachan and McAllister. They're talking about Costa and Ayling and Bamford and Bielsa and a new style of football. And that's how you take football clubs forward. You take all the history and the things that the jersey represents, but you do something new with it and you reinvent yourself. And that's what we find a lot of demand from fans is, don't throw out what we did before. but don't keep regurgitating it because it feels like we're living on in the past.
Yeah, definitely.
Just a bit of both.
Yeah, I think you might that might have answered my next question. I think the way you talk about Leeds there, but obviously, like you said, the work you've done with Chelsea and so on. Is there a club that you look at? And it might be Leeds. It might be someone else that you're not as sort of attached to, where you think, if you had the chance to sort of, you know, redesign that club to give them a refresh makeover, whatever, is there one where you'd be like, that'd be the club that I'd love to work with to sort of redesign their look?
Yeah, there's a couple. I suppose a couple of the big European clubs, I'd love to work with Bayern Munich because the value of how they carry their club and the way they, their sense of community and the way they look after fans and the way they carry themselves, I think is really amazing. Obviously, I'd love to do Leeds. And I actually, when the crest came out, I offered to redesign it for free, my company to redesign it for free. And they politely said no to me. It trended on Twitter for a bit and I got put in touch with them and they said, no, thank you. But I tend to like, Benfica would be amazing to do. Or one of the big South American teams would be really good fun to work with. One that you've kind of grown up. That's why AC Milan was so profound for me as a designer, because I'm 51 now. So I grew up watching Maldini and I grew up watching Rijkaard and Hullet. So the idea that I could work with a club that had that level of hero in it was really amazing. So I tend to connect to the big stories in the way anyone else would. So generationally, I would be attracted to those type of clubs, I think.
I mean, obviously, we've spoken already about how much football and culture is all linked into the design. And there's so many collaborations going on at the minute. Are there any that you've seen that you would recommend people to go and look at in terms of, you know, you see maybe like the PSG, Michael Jordan collaborations, things like that. There's a million sponsors and then you see all their work that they do on the kits. Is there anything that you've seen lately which you think, oh, do you know what? That's a really good piece that they've done as a collaboration between the two.
What was the latest one? The human race and Adidas.
Yeah, I like that one. There's no specific one that springs to mind because I tend to look at like brands rather than campaigns and kind of relationships. I mean, the one that strikes me the most that I saw recently that was the biggest sea change was when Juventus changed their crest and they created almost like an Adidas light look. And everybody kind of threw the toys out of the pram with that. And they very quickly realized that that change was driving greater revenue, which bought better players that got them in the Champions League and turned them into a better club. And I think what was interesting about that one was that that was about fundamental change and competing. So when we work with clubs, they have this problem of how do you buy the players without pumping money into the club in order to compete, to be at the level they want to be, to make the fans happy. So that's why they're much more globalised in the way they are now. And Juventus have done that both good and bad, but I think that one was really interesting because they had the confidence to decide to do that. And I spoke to them when they did it, and the guy who designed it and the chairman of the club decided over a beer to do it and didn't tell anyone and just released it. And I thought the bravery of that was really cool.
It's better than some of the other ones you see, like the really unoriginal ones like Man City, where it's just like a circle within a circle and then something, a picture in the middle, and that's it.
it's interesting, a bit more imaginative. It's what the design represents, because, you know, Man City is really good at women's football. Man City is really good at bringing youth players through. Man City is really good in the community. And I think that's what's really important, because the crest represents those things, and it represents, you know, the players, the manager, you know. So Guardiola is a kind of totem when it comes to great football. So the design of the crest lines up with all of those things. So I think the clubs who do the right things and are kind of pushing the best of football, both behind the scenes and on the pitch, are the ones who deserve to redesign, I think. Otherwise, it's just surface.
In regards to the approval process, I think what's really interesting about maybe the designs that don't come to life because maybe the clubs push back on it, or because they go in a different direction. Has there been a case where you've got a design and the brand in your mind's right, and the clubs have pushed back against what, you know, your advice and against maybe what the fans think? Has there been a club that's sort of taken it into their own hands, or do you see that in other redesigns that have happened in the past?
Yeah, you can see certain redesigns, you can see compromise where you can see the seed of a good idea, then it gets smoothed down. And actually, that's the same in most industries. You can see where they were going to do something really cool, and then by committee, they kind of bottled it a little bit. What we find is we're very explicit about how we work. So if you took a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being evolution and 10 being revolution, my company works in the 5 to 10 space, which is bigger change. So when we're talking to clients, what our job is to build consensus with them and build trust and get to know them, because you can't do great design work or you can't change a football club for the better without really understanding the people who run it. And when we work with AC Milan, they're all really smart, really passionate, really caring people. They deeply love their club. So our job is to understand that first. And if you gain that trust and then explain why you're going to change it on behalf of the fans, it tends to be easy to do. So we've not specifically had that problem so far, because we've tended to work on with clients who are more predisposed for a radical change.
Was football something you'd always kind of wanted when you first started out? Was it something you'd set your hopes on being able to get involved in?
Not specific. I started out doing rave flyers, and then I wanted to do 12-inch record covers for like electronica bands, which is what I did, and that's got me in the industry. And like the first time I saw a 12-inch in like a little record store, I put it at the front. I was like, man, I've made it. It was amazing. But of course, yeah. As you develop in your career, you know, I've worked with like Nike and Adidas and Amazon and Netflix and Sony and like really big companies. So we do a lot of big design work. And then what happens is your passions, I think, naturally come out. So like I said, we did a project about 15 years ago where we redesigned all of F1's design. And that was like a massive passion project, because both myself and my business partner, Apova, love Formula One. And we just drifted naturally into doing sport because it's just something we're really into. I love all sport. I like big events like the Masters, or I love the Tour de France, and I love the Champions League. And then I've been a footy fan since I was like 4 or something. So it just went there, and I suppose earned the right to do it. And we just seem to, I don't know, got the knack maybe now.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, it looks beautiful. So yeah, I also wanted to we kind of touched on AC Milan and stuff already, but I also wanted to talk more specifically about some of the projects your agency has worked on, because everyone kind of loves seeing behind the curtain a little bit. There was this part I remember watching in Leeds United, that documentary Take Us Home. I'm sure you've watched it now that we've spoken about it. Where the owner's reviewing the kits for the season. Is that kind of a glorified version of what it's actually like, or is that kind of how you presented to the board of AC Milan and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, on a basic level, it's quite mundane, because, you know, when we went to Milan, we were a bit anxious about obviously being a UK agency working with an Italian super brand. But about 80% of our work's international, so we know we can do it. But there is a nervousness that you're going to have a good cultural fit and they're going to trust you. So myself and a guy called Hayden, who's the producer on the project, flew over to present the work. We went to Casa Milan, which is their head office. And before we went in, we went through the museum and we saw, you know, the golden boot and, you know, all the kind of great trophies and stuff that they've won. And I was like super nervous, which I never get, because I'm like, man, this is actually real. But then when you're in the room, you're basically just presenting design in keynote or on a presentation. And what we tend to do is we make mood films. So we cut together a film which was the spirit of the rebrand. So it was lots of historic footage and it was animations and this really kind of epic track that summed up the feeling of the design we did. And the reason we got the project was that we went a bit away from the brief and we showed them something that they hadn't considered they could have, which is slightly higher risk. But what they said was, when you left the room, we could have gone with someone else because it was easy, but we were excited about doing something that went a bit further. And I think that's part of it, is there's a magic to creativity where you need to excite people and get them out of their seat and pumped up about it. Because if you're going to change a club, it takes a lot of effort. So
yeah,
that's what it's like, is there is a bit of theatre to it, but on a basic level, it is very mundane.
So other than AC Milan, obviously, we also saw the Amazon look and feel as they moved into the Premier League football, which is super exciting, and also the collaboration with Chelsea. Who would you say is the easiest to work with, and who gave you the hardest time is here, but obviously if you wanted to you're working with them.
All my clients are absolutely fantastic.
We thought that was coming.
Yeah, they're all fantastic and very easy to work with. In all seriousness, there's a different level of responsibility. So if you're working with Amazon, it's part of a much larger machine. So it's not as intimate as working with a football club. But then we worked on the rebrand and the TV system and stuff for the Premier League, which is a league versus a club. So Amazon is delivery of content, basically. Premier League is a league and AC Milan is a club. So you have slightly different relationships because they're more or less intimate in a sense. But the responsibility is about equal because there's 450 million AC Milan fans. There's anywhere between 1 and 1.5 billion Premier League fans. And I don't know how many Amazon fans there are. So what you try and do is get to know the client because they're the ones with a weight on their shoulder. So, for example, Casper, who headed up the project at a senior level at AC Milan, his job is to transform the future of the club. And that's everything. So he has a lot of pressure on his shoulder. And our job is to help carry that weight. And it's the same with Amazon going into the Premier League. They were competing against our design for BT Sport and also for Premier League. So in a sense, it was a chance for us to look at how to deliver the Premier League a third time, a different way. And what we wanted to do is get out of the way of the experience of the football and create a really seamless experience that works brilliantly on mobiles as well as tablets and TV, and almost like under-design it. So get to the action faster and have a much more seamless process because Amazon can be quite tricky to navigate. And they're not necessarily known for kind of sports experience. So we used all of that experience we have to create a really seamless way of getting the footy to you as quick as possible.
And obviously you just spoke, about working with the Premier League and creating an atmosphere at football was obviously so important to, fans and the team as well. And a huge part of that is the build-up music, what everyone comes out to, what gets you going before the game. And every team has their own legendary song before a match. What was it like creating the Premier League anthem? Because I can imagine that the Premier League wanted to keep that passion and atmosphere going around all the grounds.
Yeah, exactly. And it's particularly strange at the moment when there's no fans, obviously. Mm. So if you think about the Champions League, they created this really anthemic Pavlovian sound, didn't they? So when you hear that, you know that high quality football's coming. And it's a similar thing with when you run out onto the pitch at a Premier League game, is what it's telling you is something amazing is going to happen. And the Premier League is renowned around the world for kind of high octane, brilliant, visceral football. You know, it's known for that. So we work with a company called Massive who they do what's called sonic branding. And the job is to kind of capture the feeling, the thing that makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up and that kind of Pavlovian reaction, that the thing that is about to happen is almost gladiatorial or super exciting. Mm. So it's kind of cool. And it's just part of the match day experience, both in stadium and out of stadium.
I mean, you have to think about the Champions League music. I mean, the second anyone hears that, you get the goosebumps, you get this smile on your face. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, I'm so excited. So it really is a huge thing, that music, when you think about it. It just really sets the tone for like the whole game to come.
Yeah, and it's better than the design in a sense.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, when we talk about design, we're not just talking about colours and shapes. We're talking about how you talk as a brand, what it feels like, what it sounds like. So we create a 360 ecosystem. It's everything that's digital, physical, and the whole thing. So it's not just logos and colours. It's like the material choices. And, the Champions League's a very high watermark in terms of you don't need to see it. You know it.
And
that's what I love about football is it just lifts you out of your seat at its best and changes you and emotionally.
Something not quite the same about the Europa League one, unfortunately.
Neither with the design.
Yeah, very true. I'm going back to Amazon one because, from a personal point of view, like when I saw Amazon were doing football for the first time, I was a bit like, oh, bloody hell, here we go. Another platform to pay for. But actually, when they delivered it and when I watched the first match on there, on that platform, I was, pleasantly surprised. And I mean, from my perspective, I felt like the design had quite a lot to do with that. And just how people receive things, especially compared to the kind of Sky pay-per-view stuff. I don't know if you've seen any of that, but it just feels like a terrible experience. What extent do you think the kind of branding and marketing of those sorts of things play on the way that people receive new ideas like that, especially in football, which obviously people scrutinize all the time?
Yeah, well, the biggest problem is the price point, isn't it? The fact that you're getting slapped and you're having to pay. Like, this whole idea of doing pay-per-view this season is just out of order.
Yeah.
It's just morally wrong because you're already rinsing people. So I think they like to double rinse them is just a bit sharp. Yeah. But when you think about something like Amazon, it's a digital platform. So it's removed from the traditional broadcast sphere. So it has things like X-ray. It's immediate. You completely control it. So to design that, it's a much more immediate interaction with you as a fan than, say, something like Sky, which is a more traditional, systemized, in-studio, cut to the pitch, show the footy, banter back again. That's a traditional way of doing it. But a lot of people just want access now, and particularly around the world, just want to get the footy, watch it. They want to watch the highlights. They just want to watch a particular player or a certain number of goals. A lot of people around the world are not watching whole matches anymore. And there is a tension point there where, in order to serve everybody, you need the ability to deliver it and create a design system that can do 30 seconds a minute, highlight reels, and a whole match. Because everybody thinks that's valuable. The idea that people just watch 90 minutes now is just long since gone. And it's like I was saying, you serve people in the stadia, but 400 million people are watching it on a bus, on a phone. So you have to look after both people. So with Amazon, they're just more hardwired to be able to do that because it's a new digital platform.
Yeah, I was looking on your website just to do with that project in particular. I saw this graph about the amount of people interacting over 90 minutes. And I saw it like drops off in the last 5 minutes. Who's switching off in the last 5 minutes of a football match? But apparently I trust your stats.
Well, they're not mine, they're the world's. Well, if you think about it, if you've been to a footy match, haven't you? And everyone nicks off when it's 2-0 down 10 minutes before to get to the car park or the tube. It's the same thing. It's like the most important thing to people is their time. Mm. So you're constantly, with football, you're competing against movies, music, PlayStations. You're not just competing against football. So, you're watching the footy and then you're like, oh man, this is getting bored. Let's go for a beer or like shoot. And you just suddenly switch to something else. And that's why they drop. Obviously, if it's a 1-1 thriller and it's the final of Champions League, people are going to stick it out. But people get bored. And people, their mind moves to something else. And the data is telling you when that happens. If you think about football, it's a narrative. So there's a build-up to a game. There's in-game, post-game analysis, build-up to the next game. And it's all contextualized by other games that have happened. So that is the rhythm of how you design the system. It's figuring out what people are doing at any one time, based on pre-match, during the match, halftime, finish the match, after the match, get ready for the next match. So the design system has to function for all of that.
That's why I get those ads just before a game kicks off. Domino's, order now for halftime. I'm like, shall I order for halftime? Oh, maybe not.
It's a good shout, but do you know what? Yeah. It does the job because it sticks in your head when you sit back and you think about it, really.
It's just like in-game betting, though, isn't it? Mm. I mean, the betting companies got on that really quick, which is they figured out if they change the betting system, people will bet more. The food company soon triggered into that and said, oh man, we just flog pizzas and burgers. So everybody's looking at the same thing, really. Of course, what everyone's trying to do is monetize fans. So the good clubs and the good leagues give people great football without completely rinsing them. And they have a good relationship. It's not always about monetizing that relationship. But at the point of the game, that is when people are trying to make money. You know, like outside of the football clubs, all the kind of sponsors and people are trying to make cash, which is why it is the way it is. And that's why football matches now is 4 a day, you know, because you get 4 opportunities to do that.
Yeah, it's true. Simon, what is it like when you see your work out there for the first time? Do you feel so proud and you just feel like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm like seeing that. I've redesigned AC Milan. Like, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel good for the team. You know, like, there's 35 of us and there's lots of people working the work. So I always think about what it feels like for the team to see it, because obviously I've been through a lot of this in my career. So some of the people who worked on AC Milan, it's the first time they've had something like really, truly global. So there is something quite proud, but at the same time, it's really abstract. So I still look at AC Milan. They sent me a jersey recently for this season and I'm still looking at it going like, did we do this? I kind of wake up some days and think, no, we can't possibly have done that. And then you go to the stadium, you're like, oh man, we did. So it is slightly surreal, and particularly if it's something you care about, you know, some certain projects just transcend work. They go beyond just your day job into something that I look back at my career, and that will be obviously one of the things I look back with fondness.
Yeah. What's been your sort of favourite, maybe not even just sort of project overall, but has there been like a sort of favourite moment within a project where you've sort of really thought, like, that's it, we've cracked it there, like, we've got it? Or is it actually maybe the process where it's slightly harder and you think, you know, when you still haven't worked it out and like all the cogs are ticking, is there like a moment within a project where you like you really savour that?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. It's a good question, that. I've got to be honest, I like a blank canvas. So I like the process. So I like the challenge of not knowing what we're going to do, and I'm quite comfortable in that space. So I like the idea that you go, man, we've got this chance to redesign this amazing thing. What can we do? And that first bit of that is super exciting. And there is always a thing in a project where it's like a flow thing. You can feel it in your gut when you're designing well. It's like you can actually feel it. And I'm sure if you play football, it's the same thing. Sometimes you go, I'm actually playing to the level that I could. Yeah, I was always terrible, but to the level that I maximise, I'm a much better designer than as a footy player. But the you get this flow where you can feel it in your stomach, that shit, this is it. And you try and keep that feeling as long as possible. And when you're in the zone, whatever you make in that zone, you just know is good. It doesn't mean the client's necessarily going to buy it, but you know that feeling. And so those two bits are the thing I look for.
So we've touched on AC Milan, we've touched on Amazon and some big clients that you have on your side. So obviously we're Run of Play and we're the Run of Play podcast. So I wanted to get a little bit of feedback on what we've done ourselves. Do you think our logo is great? Obviously, if our designer's listening, then please go easy on him if you're going to give some bad feedback. But we'll cut it out.
I've got to be honest, I've not looked super close. But the from what I've seen and the way you carry yourself, and also the people you've had on the podcast, tells me that you're doing something good. And also the way you're handling this now is a really positive experience. So I think the podcast in general is amazing. And the design from my sensibility is really good. So whoever designed it did a good job.
Well,
shout out Jamie.
Jamie, you did a good job, man.
I think in terms of questions, that's about it. What we are going to do, if that's all right with you, Simon, is move on to something that we call Against the Run of Play. So it's a little game that we play, which is basically a quick fire round. We'll give you two options, and you just pick your favourite out of those two. There's no right or wrong answer, although you will be judged by those listening for what you say. So it will basically be just a couple of questions. We'll start really nice and easy, and there's only about four or five of them, so it'll be fine. So first one is AC Milan or Inter Milan?
AC.
Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
Nike or Adidas?
Adidas.
You said you work with both. That's tough.
That's why my head rolled.
Yeah. Lampard or Gerrard?
Scholes.
I'm tempted to agree. 40-yard screamer or perfectly worked tiki-taka goal? With Bielsa in charge as well. Yeah, that's what I thought was coming. And then the last one, if you were to be a manager, would you be a suit manager or a tracksuit manager?
Suit
all day long.
Yeah. Sure. But none of these vest things. I'd go Italian. I'd get my hair grey and go like the Italian managers who just get a sweet suit. Yeah. Do that.
Not like Pep Guardiola jumper that he started wearing again.
That's got to see. He rocks a good look. I'm not sure about Southgate's look. It's a bit M&S for my taste.
It's very M&S.
It's literally M&S. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know, there's like Italian managers where they don't mind that getting a bit heavier and they're a bit older. I'm about to change that face, so I'd probably try and rock that look. Open collar.
Oh, brilliant. Amazing. I think that's about it, isn't it, on our side?
Yeah, thank you so much, Simon, for coming on. It's been really, really interesting to hear. And I can't wait for other people to hear.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's an awesome podcast. So many thanks for all the interesting questions.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thanks so much, Simon.
Cheers, Simon. Have a good evening.
Cheers.
See you all. Take care.
Bye. Thanks for listening to episode 11 of the Run of Play podcast. It was fantastic chatting with Simon about the design and branding aspect of football that's so influential nowadays. Please do subscribe wherever you get your podcast and drop us a rating. You can follow us at Run of Play Pod on Twitter and Instagram for more content as well. Run of Play will be back very, very soon with another expert guest, so make sure you stay tuned.